station sponsor.
Oxygen saturations have dropped to 89% and breathing is laboured. I've done an ECG and she's in fast AFib. Her blood pressure was stable, but her systolic has dropped to 95. What should we do?
Every single day, nursing and midwifery graduates face situations that go beyond theory. That's why we teach our students to be creative thinkers, because creative thinking can be your superpower. ECU, creative thinkers made here. Search ECU and apply now.
Are you looking for a gift for that special person in your life? Maybe for an anniversary, a loyal employee, or a birthday, or graduation. Whatever the reason, station sponsor Grazie Gifts have a massive range of gift basket and hamper options to suit all occasions. So, to choose the right gift for that special person and order online, visit grazie.com.au. That's grazie.com.au.
If you marked an X on the map of Perth for every investment property managed by Exceed Property Management, there'd be so many X's, you'd be hard-pressed to read the map. That's because station sponsor Exceed Real Estate are one of Perth's largest and most successful property managers. Exceed delivers exceptional service, excellent performance, and extraordinary reliability. In property management, X means Exceed Real Estate. Life is better with Exceed.
Pentanet is building a world-first gigabit internet network, and they need you to make it a reality. Join Operation Nexus to do your gigabit and save Perth from ordinary internet. Register for free at pentanet.com.au/nexus.
Station sponsor.
Give your business a unique position right here. Go to 897fm.com.au.
This is 897FM News.
National Radio News.
Hello, I'm Laura Devoy. The head of Israeli military intelligence has resigned, becoming the first senior Israeli official to step down over Hamas's attacks last October. The BBC's Yolande Nell reports from Jerusalem.
Major General Aharon Haliva is the head of Israeli military intelligence. He's the first general of the army's general staff to leave his position, basically due to the failures that led to the October the 7th attack and then the war in Gaza. Quite soon after that attack, Major General Halevi had taken public responsibility. He wrote, "We didn't live up to our mission. I bear full responsibility for the failure." But there was a lot of work, we understand, behind the scenes to try to keep big figures in place as Israel went into this war in Gaza. We're told that as head of military intelligence, he'll stay in position until he has a replacement.
Dozens of people are wanted by police in New South Wales investigating a riot outside a Western Sydney church last week. Police today released the images of 12 people in the hopes of public assistance in identifying them. One has since handed himself in. The riot outside the Christ the Good Shepherd Church in Wakeley erupted last Monday night after a bishop was stabbed during a service that was being live streamed. A teenage boy has been charged with a terrorism offence in relation to the alleged stabbing. Acting Assisting Commissioner Andrew Holland says police believe the ringleaders of the riot were not members of the church community.
There was up to about 2,000 people attended the riot. We believe that there's 50 people that have definitely gone there simply because they wanted to start problems. We know that there's groups of families involved that have gone there to support their parishioner, and we're not looking for those people, but again, we'll be looking to speak with them if they can provide us any information about the people involved in that violent behaviour.
Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young has called on Elon Musk to front Parliament after the social media baron had refused to cooperate with the eSafety Commissioner. Noah Seckham reports from Canberra.
Politicians across the spectrum have come forward criticising ex-boss Elon Musk for refusing to remove violent videos and other misinformation about recent stabbings in Sydney. Sarah Hanson-Young says she is appalled that Mr. Musk is refusing to take down the violent posts and is evading accountability.
Elon Musk should front up to the Australian people. He should front up here to Parliament and argue why his company shouldn't have a social conscience and shouldn't be doing the right thing.
Ms. Hanson-Young says tech giants cannot just be slapped with wet lettuce regulations to take down dangerous content. Noah Seckham, National Radio News, Canberra.
St. John WA is the first emergency service in the country to provide Auslan interpreting services for deaf or hard of hearing patients. In partnership with Convo Australia, all ambulance crews in Western Australia will have access to certified Auslan interpreters in real time via videos on iPads. The new partnership builds on progress spearheaded by paramedic Lauren Darcy, who says the service is beneficial and a game changer.
It can be in varying
different types. So sometimes they're our patient, maybe they are a bystander or a witness, possibly they are a family member of someone affected. So for us, it's really important that when we need to communicate with people of any language group, that we're able to do that.
Turning to sport, Newcastle Knights fullback Kalyn Ponga is set to miss the entire State of Origin series with a foot injury. The Queenslander has been diagnosed with a Lisfranc rupture and will undergo surgery. He's expected to be sidelined for 3 months. Canberra Raiders halfback Jamal Fogarty will also be out for 3 months after suffering a biceps injury over the weekend.
National Radio News, produced by Charles Sturt University, the Community Radio Network, and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
This is Night Shift.
Well, listeners, welcome to Sports Mix here on 89.7 FM, where you'll hear all of the latest rugby league news in our rugby league segment between 6 and 7, followed by a very special junior program tonight. We're going to preview the Olympic Games from 7 till 8 p.m. with a number of special guests, because it's less than 100 days to go. But to get started with our rugby league segment, it's a warm welcome to my co-host in the studio, our man of steel, Tim Park. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening, Gordon. How are you this tonight?
Fitting well, Tim, and all the more better for having you in the studio. We've got a big program as usual, but listeners, we've got a slight change to our schedule as our resident NRL expert, Greg McCallum, he's overseas, so our local guru, Peter Rowe, will join us around about 6:25 to cover all the NRL and local rugby league news. Big task, but I know Peter's been watching all the games, Tim.
Well, we'll miss Greg, but Peter's on the ball.
He's on the ball, so he'll be well prepared. And then just to finish off, we'll ask him what's happening in the English Rugby League. But to kick-start our program tonight, kick it off, it's a warm welcome to Caleb Reedy, the Operations Manager at the NRL WA. Good evening, Caleb.
Good evening, Gordon. How are you, Timmy?
Good day, Caleb. How are you?
Caleb, very well.
We're
both going very well indeed. But a question without notice, can the Warriors beat the Titans next weekend because the Warriors couldn't win last weekend? We'll leave that alone, Caleb.
Listen, mate, on the Warriors, we lost to the Dragons when we weren't supposed to, which means we'll probably bounce back very hard and confuse all the tipsters out there.
Excellent to hear, Caleb. Hey, Caleb, talking about getting started, the junior competitions for the West Australian Rugby League, how are things going at the moment with preparations and clubs and boys and girls and officials and families and friends and everything else? What's happening?
It's wonderful, isn't it? That's what we like to hear.
Look, it's all happening. Look, the clubs are in full swing, and most clubs have seen growth already, and the comp's not even started, and numbers continue to trickle in. If you are in person wondering where you can play your local rugby league, jump on playrugbyleague.com. And literally type in your postcode or suburb and you'll find your closest rugby league club. But we do kick off in 2 weeks' time. I believe it's actually about 11 days. 13 days. That's when our local juniors kick off.
Who's counting, Caleb? who's counting?
Caleb is.
The draws should be all out this week, so I'm very excited. And you know, I'm hoping we continue to see the registrations roll in, boys.
We're all so excited about rugby league, and we love it. But what starting at this level, what's the tackling training issue? Because obviously, it's going to get more and more the issue to look at.
Yeah, look, you're right. And I suppose concussion has been a big thing, Tim. And you know, teaching kids proper tackle technique, and the NRL has it's implemented an initiative in the last couple of years called Tackle Ready, where all under 7 players have to complete the Tackle Ready program before they move into actually playing a tackle component. So under 6s,
correct,
is tag, and then we move into under 7s, which is the Tackle Ready program. So that season starts off as tag, and then they progress to tackle after the tackle-ready completion.
I really like what you're saying, because we don't want to sanitise the game, but we need to be conscious of the conscious, if you like.
100%, Tim, and you're absolutely right. Like, obviously, society has made us make these changes. People need to be protected, and, you know, we are getting a lot of I suppose, guys from our generations and the guys I looked up to from your guys' generations that are, you know, mental illness is real and the concussion syndrome is a thing, and, you know, the awareness is greater. And when you've got things like government Senate inquiries talking about concussion, it is a big deal.
It is.
It certainly is. And if we're talking tackle ready, and I just digress for a moment, Caleb, can the Parramatta Eels undertake that program as well?
Look, it was an interesting one on the weekend with the Eels, isn't it? Man, I thought that it was, they were tired and it was too hot for them. the sweat was pouring off everyone and they just looked, they looked disinterested in the second half, and I think they just ran out of puff. So
certainly did.
Mate, full credit to the Dolphins.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've been the surprise package for me.
They certainly have been. So, Caleb, in terms of now our junior clubs, you know, with their volunteers, registrations, and everything is getting set to start, what, in 13 days' time? And is there any increase in the number of girls participating or registering at the moment, do you know?
Yes, so our girls' registrations are up across the board. In the under, so we shifted our age groups slightly. So we were under 13s, under 15s, and under 17s. We've shifted to under 14s, under 16s, and under 18s. And that's just to be in line with our representative teams, because we send our under 16 schoolgirls and our under 18 schoolgirls. So it didn't make sense to have 15s and 17s, if that makes sense. And especially in the under 16s age group, we've seen an uptick in our registrations for that girls age group. So we're very excited about it. And I've just come off a big weekend of watching the Rise Challenge and technically the state trials, and the girls, they go from strength to strength every year, and the leaps that they do in terms of their games are phenomenal.
Good.
That's fantastic, Caleb, and that's a good lead-in now to the Rise Challenge over the weekend. Mm. Can you just let our listeners know some details? We've got the Southwest Dolphins, the Southern Pride and the Northern Fusion. The purpose, it's a guide to the WA under-16 schoolgirl and under-15 schoolboy selections, but there's far more involved in that, Caleb.
Yeah, so we'll just backtrack, and I suppose the Rise program, we talk about what is the Rise program, and basically, I believe it was in 2017 when Mal Meninger first became the Kangaroos head coach, and it was the first time in, I think, 20 years that Australia were not the number one team in the world. It was actually New Zealand. And he came in and he talked about, he wanted to change the culture of what the Australian team was all about, and they came up with this concept called RISE. And basically it's all about respect and routine, integrity, socializing and evolving, and that's filtered all the way down through the ranks. And thanks to the team led by Neil Henry, who obviously is a very accomplished NRL coach in his own right, they've came up with a full holistic program, which is based around not just rugby league, but life skills, strength and conditioning, proper gym work, all these things. They've created a program for aspiring athletes between the ages of 13 and 16.
Yeah, vital years.
Sorry,
I was saying vital years.
Yes, so those vital development years, and especially in a place like WA. So obviously, in those age groups over east, you have like Harold Matthews programs and junior representative programs that the Roosters or the Dragons or the Knights, for instance, run. But if you're out of those catchment areas or you know, probably living a bit far away, where are you going to get your representative experience from? Where are you going to get that little bit extra that club doesn't provide? And that's what the Rise is really good at. It's gives you that representative experience along with this full holistic program around life skills, around, you know, becoming not just better football players, but better students, better members of your community. And basically, you run this program over the course of 6 to 10 weeks. And then, obviously, after the Rise program, we play in what we call the Rise Challenge, which is, you know, a weekend carnival or competition, for better words. And they play, basically, they just go all out and play rugby league and take the skills that they've learned inside the Rise program. And look, the kids keep score, people keep score. We don't actually care about the score. We just want them out there doing what they do best.
Well said. Well said. Yeah, good stuff. That's really good.
So basically the kids out there, and it also allows, when you take that pressure off, you see that the kids who normally don't get that those shots or those opportunities, people who think that they're not as good, they really thrive and shine in the environment, which is what we want. We want everybody get to have the chance to show what they've got. And in the under-15s in particular, we saw an 100% increase in participation in kids in that age group from the year before, when it was junior state champs and it was all about winning. And we don't really want it to be about that. We want it to be about the participant.
That is absolutely fantastic, Caleb. And you'll be doing that again for next season as well?
Yeah, and we'll continue to fine-tune it and make it better for everyone involved. Obviously, this was the first year we've kind of run it like this out of the RISE program, guys. So, obviously, we're always looking to improve. So, we'll take some of the learnings we did this year and make it better again next year and again the year after and continue to make it better.
Fantastic.
Really good. Congratulations to you.
And your staff and team and all the volunteers and clubs that have been involved and the players and their families as well. And, Caleb, just finally, this weekend, Anzac Challenge, squads and teams for the senior men, the boys under 18, the women's tackle and the women's league tag. So everything's getting ready for a big day on Saturday.
100%, mate. So obviously we're at Dorrien Gardens again this year. And we're back to our Anzac Challenge date. So we're on Anzac week. So obviously Anzac Day is this Thursday. So it's a big week for... you know, the players and a lot of the guys, they hold it close to their hearts. Like, you know, most of us know someone who was or is a serviceman or woman. So we're really excited for it to be back. And look, the under-18s, they locked in their teams today. And to be honest with you, the under-18s game is one of the coolest ones to watch because the guys, they really go after it. The men's and the women's and the league tag, they'll be finalising their squads later on this week.
And what time does all that start next Saturday at Dorrien Gardens, Caleb?
Yeah, look, the gates will open at 11 a.m. And 11:30 will be the women's league tag first game. 12:45 will be the under-18s boys. And then we have we've got two touch football games in the middle of the day. So that's women's and men's touch football, and we do that with our touch football colleagues. We've invited them to be a part of the Anzac Challenge, and they love it as well. And then we have the women's at, I believe it's at 3:50, and then we have our Anzac ceremony at 5:25, followed by the men's game at 5:40.
Big day. Wonderful day, and certainly great acknowledgement of the tradition of Anzac. Well, Caleb Reedy, the operations manager at the NRLWA, thank you so much for joining us here tonight on Sports Mix with our rugby league segment. All the best for the rest of the week. Congratulations on the RISE Challenge, and can't wait to keep up to date with you concerning the junior competitions, which will start in 13 days' time.
Awesome. Thank you very much, guys. Caleb. Thanks for having me, like always.
Cheers.
Cheers, Matt.
Cheers. Bye. Well, great insight there to what's happening with the junior side of things as well.
It's really good, Gordon, and there's obviously a push in WA to get things going, which is great.
Well and truly. Well, listeners, we'll go to our first break here on Sports Mix. And after the break, we'll be joined by Peter Rowe, who's going to review the NRL Round 7, preview the NRL Round 8, and we'll chat about the NRLWA on the weekend and all the other local rugby league news. But don't forget our special preview of the Olympic Games with Caitlin Fox-Harding and the ECU crew in the studio between 7 and 8. And we're going to be starting that segment with a live chat with Greg Kading, the chair of the WA Olympic Committee. Can't wait. Sports Mix, 89.7 FM.
Long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die." Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, now do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Be the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone, but that's not how it used to be. When the jester sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. King was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown, the courtroom was adjourned.
City of Wanneroo, corporate sponsor, proudly supporting 89.7 FM.
Are you part of a community group searching for new members or looking to promote your upcoming event? Head to the City of Wanneroo's community directory and register your group today. The online directory can be found at wanneroo.wa.gov.au/community directory.
Proudly brought to you by 89.7 FM.
Pentanet is building a world-first gigabit internet network, and they need you to make it a reality. Join Operation Nexus to do your gigabit and save Perth from ordinary internet. Register for free at pentanet.com.au/nexus.
Station sponsor.
Need to talk about your alcohol or drug use? The team at Drug Info can answer your questions about the effects of different drugs, including alcohol, illicit and prescribed drugs, and provide advice and practical information. Call 1300 858584. It's free and confidential. Call 1300 858584. Drug Info is brought to you by the Alcohol and Drug Foundation.
In Australia, a bandit or an outlaw is called a bushranger. One of Australia's most infamous bushranger was a man named Ned Kelly. Ned Kelly was a wild young bushranger Out of Victoria he rode with his brother Dan. He loved his people and he loved his freedom, and he loved to ride the wide open land. Ned Kelly was a victim of the changes that came when his land was a sprouting seed, and the wrongs he did were multiplied in legend, with young Australia growing like a weed. Ned Kelly took the blame, Ned Kelly won the fame, Ned Kelly brought the shame, and then Ned Kelly hanged. Well, he hid out in the bush and in the forest, and he loved to hear the wind blow in the trees, while the men behind the badge were coming for him. Ned said, "They'll never bring me to my knees." But everything was change and running cycles, and Ned knew that his day was at an end. He made a suit of armor out of plowshares, but Ned was brought down by the trooper's men. Ned Kelly took the blame, Ned Kelly won the fame, Ned Kelly brought the shame, and then Ned Kelly hanged.
Listeners, just a little bit of Johnny Cash there with Ned Kelly, and talking about the Ned Kellys and Johnny Cash, it's a warm welcome to our local rugby league guru, Peter Rowe. Good evening, Peter. How are you?
That's a bit rough, Pete.
Well, I introduced myself with both Tom McLean's American Pie, one of my favourite songs. But,
that's what I thought. A little bit of a mix up there tonight on Sports Mix. Well and truly, Peter. Now, Peter, of course, as we know, Greg McCallum's away, and we know that you've been watching all of the rugby league games. So we'll start with NRL Round 7. Of course, last Thursday, Tim Storm, 18, defeated the Roosters 12.
They're just doing enough, Pete, aren't they? No more.
Yes, they look pretty competent. They're second on the ladder. Well, they're going up on the ladder if you want to start.
Yep.
And they're doing just enough, and that's a sign of a good sign.
Exactly right. Now, of course, there was a new movie released a little while ago with Michael Caine called The Great Escaper. Well, we can term that terminology now for the Melbourne Storm. and then on, of course, Friday night, well, the reinvigorated Dragons defeated the Warriors 30-12. After the Warriors looked like they would run away with it in the opening 20 minutes. Zach Lomax, why would you let him go?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got a sign I was going to hurt you guys, and it reads Zach Lomax and Trent Robertson assumed Doyston Parramatta floundered, and that's round seven. So, yes, why would you? Zach Lomax, top of the Daly M leaderboard after seven rounds. You've got to wonder what's been said or not been said down at St. George.
Exactly right. And of course, Ben Hunt's kicking game. And as we mentioned in Talking Sport on Saturday, Tom Eisenhuth, 56 tackles for the Dragons. He's certainly leading the
way.
Huge,
isn't it?
Yeah, Dragons they've turned themselves around, and they seem to be on a little bit of a mission. When we get to the preview, I know they've got a couple of players coming back in, so you'll probably see that very much back on the wing.
Well and truly.
They're no slouches. They're still a hit and miss side, I think. You know, they'll win some and they'll lose probably just as many. But nevertheless, it's a much improved side on last year, isn't it?
Certainly is,
without doubt.
And their forward pack is bigger and doing a lot of damage in the middle of the ruck area.
2 years ago, they've got the cattle.
Well, pre-season I was a bit worried because they look really tired and sluggish up the middle. But maybe they've done some work and got those big men.
Certainly that appears to be the case. Now, of course, Friday night as well in Darwin in hot and sweaty conditions. The Eels led 10-4, but ended up losing 44-16 to the Dolphins. They scored at will in the second half, 9 tries to 3. Jack Bostock, a triple header.
Eight tries in 25 minutes. You've got to ask a question.
Yep.
You've got to ask two questions, Rick. Where did that come from the Dolphins with 7 out and kids coming in and really making their mark? And then on the other side of the coin, what happened to Parramatta? Did they get on the bus at halftime?
No.
To go, I don't know. They just didn't turn up, did they? No,
they certainly didn't. As Tim said, 8 tries in 25 minutes. That's one every 3 minutes, which basically when you
break
the
game, isn't it?
Their sixth set of tackles is about a minute and a quarter. So incredible there. And I suppose the question that needs to be asked, and I say it jokingly, but who needs Wayne Bennett when Christian Wolf was in charge with that victory, Peter?
Yeah, Wayne was left at home on his farm in South East Queensland. I guess it's South East Queensland. I believe he had about the flu or something. That's the rumour that was going around. But, yeah, I mean, Christian Wolf's a good coach. He coached the Collins Institute.
Exactly.
He's been around for a number of years. He's no slouch. He's done a good job. And I'm almost certain that Wayne would have been on the phone.
You would think so, well and truly, Peter.
With his dry wit.
Exactly. Now, of course, then on Saturday, starting out there at Bathurst at Carrington Park, the Panthers 22 defeated the Tigers 6. I don't think the Panthers ever got out of first gear. Isaiah Yeo, Daniel Edwards had outstanding games, but probably wasn't a true indication of the score or the effort. It wasn't until 9 minutes from the end when Fisher Harris scored his try that really put the Panthers in front.
Yeah, Panthers are sitting fourth. They're only 2 points behind the Sharks and the Storm. They've had a bit of a, I wouldn't say sluggish, but they've had a slowish start to their season. But they're a little bit like the Storm, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
They'll turn it on when they need to. I know that Cleary's back this weekend, potentially. So, big wins, I think, moving forward. To be fair to the Tigers, they've had a couple of good performances in the past few weeks, but they're not the real deal yet.
Exactly right. Now, of course, the next match was the Titans taking on the Sea Eagles, and the Sea Eagles 34 defeated the Titans 30, and it was in a seesawing match.
Probably a bit better performance by that team, but they're still, you never know what you're going to get, do you?
11 tries.
Well, that's right. I was at a local game here in WA on Saturday afternoon, and sat next to me was a friend of mine, and he had his phone going, and he was getting pings and things as the NRL scores were coming in. Somebody had tweeted or put up on social media, they're clearly a Titans fan, disgruntled with some of the refereeing, and they asked, is Ken Arthurson running the bunker?
Well, there's a blast from the past, Peter Rowe, well and truly. But certainly it was a seesawing game. The lead changed about 7 times. I thought the highlight was the cripple, as I call him, Kieran Foran, and his banana kick to see AJ Brimson jump above Tommy Turbo to regather and score was outstanding.
It was.
Yeah, Brimson had a great catch there, didn't he? One little point I'd note of, that was Dan Hazlewood's 13th consecutive loss.
Yes.
And that makes you wonder if he is going to be first in the top.
Yes, we'll wait and see what happens in the future there.
And might, of course, might be a toss-up between him and Arthur,
and
maybe.
Arthur at Parramatta. Yes, well and truly.
Yes.
Now, Cam Pereira, 2 tries for the Titans, did very well, but DCE, absolutely incredible, getting better with age,
not
Peter.
Kidding.
Oh, I think he is, yeah. Well, what comes with experience, guys, is certainly in the halves, is you can often see the game 2 or 3 plays in advance. You know, you can judge and figure what's going on in the good halves. He can plot the game as he goes through. And if you've got a youngster alongside him, he'll learn a lot off somebody like Dade.
Well and truly. Now, the Broncos on Saturday, 34-10 over the Raiders in the wet up there in Brisbane. The Broncos led 28-0 at half time. It was all over. Reece Walsh, 2 tries, 5 goals. But Jamal Fogarty, injury for the Raiders, that's a serious blow.
Yeah, it is.
It is a blow, yeah. He'll be gone for 3 months, I'm reading, for the bicep injury. So, yeah, that's a big blow for the Raiders, and it makes you wonder if they're going to make the 8 now.
It does.
Come the end of the season. It's a long way to go. We're only in round 7, round 8. But yes, Jamal Fogarty lost. It's a big one for Canberra. Brisbane, on the other hand, you know, they've got players back this week, so that'll be a big plus for them. And I think they're going to start to climb the ladder.
Well and truly.
They just look the goods, don't they? You know, it's unthinkable that they won't be in the top four at the end of the year.
No, I can't see them not being in the top four, to be honest. No, they're a good side. Unless they get more injuries, of course, and then, you know, that then starts to question how much depth they've got.
We'll see what happens. Now, the Dogs are 36, defeated the Knights 12, 6 tries to 2. The Dogs coach certainly very happy. Matt Burton, 6 from 6. But I suppose the most stupid thing was the Newcastle coach, in my mind, keeping Kalyn Ponga out on the field when he was, you could see, noticeably injured.
Well, they're going to suffer for it.
They're going to suffer for it.
That's not good coaching in my mind. I don't know why they did that. Maybe they didn't have too many options on the bench.
It suggests that he thinks they're a one-man team. That's what it tells me.
Well, and what is a one-man team, is it?
No, it's not, but it looks like that's what they think.
Yeah. They brought him off earlier. They may have actually helped a recovery track that, you know, going forward. But now Kalyn Ponga's going to be out for quite a few weeks, I'm led to believe. So.
The future for the Knights doesn't look that crazy, does it? When you look at the position on the league table right now, and the future doesn't look all that great.
But what a turnaround. Guys. Last year, the Knights beat the Dogs 66-0.
Exactly. Exactly, Peter.
Yeah.
Yep.
So a big turnaround there by 30-odd points. Yeah. So well done to the Dogs. And in the last game at Shark Park yesterday, the Sharks 42, steamrolled the Cowboys 6, led 24-0 at halftime. Brayden Trindle and Ronaldo Malatalo doubles there. But Nicho Hynes, 7 from 7, and he steered the Sharks around the park.
Most definitely.
He's a big, big candidate for Origin 5.
Yes.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah, one of them have got to be in that 5-8 spot for the Blues. Steered them around the park and the top of the ladder. They look good. To be fair, I mean, Hynes gave Drinkwater a lesson in rugby league, didn't he, really?
Certainly did, Peter. Well and truly.
I was too many errors, too many drop balls, knock-ons, knock-on over the try line, which is doable in the pro game. I watched that on Saturday in one of our games, and that's forgivable at our level, but not in the NRL. Nicky is looking really good, and the Sharks are looking good, yeah.
Well and truly, and the Rabbits, of course, had the bye. Now, Peter and Tim, NRL Round 8 starts on Thursday, Anzac Day, of course. The Warriors up against the Titans. Will the Warriors bounce back, Peter?
I think they will.
It's in New Zealand as well, isn't it?
Yes.
One reason is it's in New Zealand, and I've yet to see anything, any major spark at the Titans that makes me go, they're going to bounce back. I just think they're on a losing run, and sometimes when you're in that habit of losing, it's really, really hard to get out of.
It certainly is.
The mold. You'll know that, I guess, from being away. Gordon.
Well and truly, Peter.
It's really, really hard to break that mold.
It certainly is.
The Warriors are a tenth at the moment. I think they're a potential top eight team, so I'm going to go Warriors.
Tim?
Warriors for me.
Ryan, the normal, traditional Anzac Day match, the Dragons and the Roosters.
This is a good game.
Jack Bird's back for the Dragons. Lomax will be back on the wing. Sam Walker's back for the Roosters, so is Don Young. It'll be a cracking game.
It will be.
I think it'll be a really good game, as they always are, the Anzac games. I'm going to stick my neck out and go Roosters on this one.
Tim?
I'm a bit inclined that way, but it is a home game for the Dragons. I'm just not sure about this one. Yeah. I'll go Roosters, but we could easily get that one wrong.
I'm going for the Roosters. Yeah. Now, the Storm up against the Rabbits. Rabbits coming off a bye.
Cook's back for the Rabbits.
Yes.
That'll make too much of a difference. I think Melbourne are too much of a gelled together team. So, unfortunately, being a Rabbits fan, I've got to go for Melbourne.
And that is in Melbourne, of course, Tim. So you'll be going Storm.
Without doubt.
Friday, the Eagles up against the Eels.
will the Eels turn up? Battle of the Birds and all that sort of battle of the Birds.
I can imagine there's been some strong words behind closed doors at Eels, so they've got to be better.
I would definitely think so. I mean, Brad Arthur was pretty strong, wasn't he, after the game? You know, he was really criticising his own team, quite right though as well. You know, he called him, I think the phrase I've got written down, a part-time footy team.
That's correct.
After weeks, after last week's results. Obviously, they've lost three or four games since Mitch Moses is out. That's going to be a big hurt for them. But Manly, I think, are, Manly will be too strong for you.
Tim?
The Eagles for me every time. I think I like the look of the Eagles, and I'll worry about the Eagles.
Now, Saturday, the Tigers will take on the Broncos at Campbelltown.
Yep.
Go the Tigers, Gordon.
Go the Tigers.
Not a good hunting ground for the Tigers.
No, it certainly isn't, Peter. There's no hoodoo at Campbelltown for the Tigers.
No, I know. And Junior Cooper's out as well with a foot injury.
Yep.
Reynolds is back. Haas is back. A lot of players returning. I think Brisbane will probably be at full strength or pretty close to it, so I've got to go for Brisbane.
Tim?
Oh, Broncos by a long way.
And the other game on Saturday is the Cowboys and the Panthers up in Townsville.
Again, Cowboys were so poor at the week. Can't see them turning it around to such a degree where they'll beat Penrith. So we're clearly back. If Cleary's back in the halves for Penrith, it's got to be Penrith.
Tim?
Yeah, Cowboys are funny, aren't they? They look quite good a few weeks ago, and all of a sudden they don't. Panthers for me.
And Sunday, we've got the Dolphins up against the Knights.
I certainly like the look of the Dolphins in the second half, because everybody was worried that they didn't have enough depth and they'd fall away, but they didn't. So that will give them a lot of positive vibes at the club. With Ponga out for the Knights, they're going to struggle, I think, the Knights, the rest of the season. So it's got to be Dolphins.
Dolphins by a margin for me.
And down in sunny Canberra, Sunday afternoon, Raiders up against the Sharks. Peter?
Well, you've got Fogarty out, Kara Weeks is back in, but then the Sharks have got Royce Hunt, local WA boy.
Yeah, local WA boy.
Back in their squad this week, and I think Dale Finucane's back as well, so I'm going to go Sharks.
I think the Sharks will be biting, and I don't hold much hope for the Raiders.
No. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your NRL review and predictions. We'll go to a short break, very short break. We'll keep you online, Peter, and when you come back, we're going to be talking the round three results of the local rugby league competition, have a quick chat about the Anzac Challenge and any other news that's happening locally, all that and more. Sports Mix, 89.7 FM.
Tune in every Monday evening to Sports Mix between 6 to 8 p.m. with Gordon Allen and the team for all the latest rugby league news and what's happening in local junior sport. For your latest weekly sports fix, it's Sports Mix on 89.7 FM.
Have you ever wanted to look at the stars up close? Well, now you can. Station sponsor the Gravity Discovery Centre will open a whole new world of amazement for you. Located north of Perth, just off Indian Ocean Drive, the Gravity Discovery Centre has something for everyone, with a great range of attractions. Climb the Leaning Tower, explore the Cosmology Gallery, get up close in the Biodiversity Gallery, and take in the marvels of the Milky Way at the Observatory. For more information, bookings and tickets, go to gravitycentre.com.au.
Pentanet is building a world-first gigabit internet network, and they need you to make it a reality. Join Operation Nexus to do your gigabit and save Perth from ordinary internet. Register for free at pentanet.com.au/nexus.
Station sponsor.
It is possible to stop using drugs.
We can help.
Call Narcotics Anonymous, 1300 652 820.
Or look us up on the web, na.org.au.
On 89.7, Talking Sport, from 8 to 11 a.m. Saturdays.
Well, listeners, welcome back to our Sports Mix here on 89.7 FM. We're into our third segment here on our Rugby League program. And we're joined by Peter Rowe, our local Rugby League guru. And Peter, West Australian Rugby League, round three on the weekend. The Sharks defeated South Perth and Fremantle defeated the Giants by 2 points.
Close game. I'm led to believe. I wasn't at the Joondalup game. I was at the Rockingham game, but up at Admiral Park, the Giants nearly grabbed a point in a draw. In the last minute, halfback Gus Marshall had a conversion. He thought the clock was running out and he rushed it and he sank the kick and it went wide. And Frio got home by 2 points.
By 2 points. 26-24, five tries to four. And, of course, in the review of that game, the Giants had 3 18-year-olds on debut, I believe, Peter.
There's a lot of youngsters coming through this season in senior football, which is a positive for the game. and South Perth had 7 under 19 in their team on Saturday. So there you go. There's a lot of youngsters starting to break in, and it's good to see.
Yep.
I think it'll take them a while to acclimatise, because it's a big jump up from junior footy or 18s football into senior grade. From what I saw of and heard of both games, they didn't disclose themselves.
It's good.
Well, that's fantastic. And, of course, the Sharks 34 defeated South Perth 24. And good to see that Keelan Tudor a try and 5 goals for the Sharks, Peter.
Yes. Sharks were very good in the first half, raced to a 28-4 lead at half-time and looked really solid, structurally, combination working. I don't know what they put in the tee at half-time because they were different. and South Perth came back to them really, really strongly. And, you know, got to a 10-point game. Got to give credit to young Lions out there. As I said, there were 7 players under 19 years of age.
Fantastic.
Good for the future.
They pushed them all the way. And it was eventually, Sharks got home, but it's close.
It's good to see. Mm. Of course, North Beach had the bye. Sharks 2 from 3, 6 points first on the ladder at this stage. In the Val Murphy, well, Fremantle defeated Willoughby. Kalamunda defeated the Sharks. The Giants defeated the Rabbits. And Alkimos defeated South Perth 34-22. North Beach had the bye. Frio sitting on top of the Val Murphy competition there. 2 wins from 3 games with 6 points. So very close tussle there in some of those games, because Fremantle was 28-24 over Willoughby. In the Women's League tag, Frio 32 defeated Willoughby 12. Giants defeated the Rabbits, and South Perth defeated the Sharks. South Perth and Joondalup both on 6 points there. And the women's competition, of course, will start. As we know, we spoke with Kayla Breedy, the juniors, in 13 days. Same applies, I think it's 12 days, for the women's competition. Good. Now, round 4 of the local competition, Peter, it's a bye, doesn't come back now till the 4th of May, but we've got the Anzac Challenge coming up this weekend at Dorrien Gardens, and 4 big games coming up.
Yeah, it's an annual challenge. Last year, I think it was delayed a little bit and played a bit later in the season. Maybe that didn't work because it didn't sort of resonate with the Anzac weekend. This year, much, much closer, a couple of days away, or after the Anzac Day on Thursday. Perth City, or Perth residents, Perth Aussies against Perth Kiwis. So, it's always a good challenge. It's a bit of a mate versus mate, I suppose. So, I was speaking to Dwayne Butler, the captain of Fremantle, on the Sunday morning, and you spoke to him, you wouldn't believe he was a Kiwi, but mum and dad are both Kiwi. He's very, very proud to be donning the black and white on Saturday for the Kiwis.
That's cool. Good.
Good. That's the senior men, the boys under 18, women's league tag and the women's tackle. And, of course, our very own Mahina Clare has been selected in one of the teams there for the Anzac Challenge in the women's tackle. So be a big day on Saturday. And, of course, honouring the tradition of Anzac with the ceremony as well. Well, Peter, I hope you had time to watch the or catch up with the English Super League at the same time.
Because 9,000 in a day, Peter.
Exactly right. Rugby league never stops, Peter. It never stops.
No, I know. And yes, I've caught up a little bit. I watched some of the Warrington game on
excellent.
They had a great comeback to beat Lee. And Burgess was talking after the game, and I think a couple of players were talking the differences that Sam had made to the club and how they turned things around from four season last year. So they're looking good, Warrington. Wigan also had a good win at Castleford, 36-14, and Bevan French, who's an Aussie from South Wales, was their MVP. He's a great player, really, really good. So they're Man of Steel. 2 assists and an opening try. He's what the English people call box office. You know, you go out and watch Bevan play the game. A superb cut-out pass to set up Liam Marshall for one of Wigan's tries. That was a quality game from the Wigan's point of view. Leeds, sadly, that's their 4th home game loss in a row at Headingley, going down to Huddersfield. That was not really good from a Leeds point of view, and you have to wonder whether Rowan Smith will be there much too long, much longer. I'm not sure about that one. Of course, his uncle, Tony Smith, departed Hull last week. They're still not doing anything at all, are they? They got thumped by 50-0.
Exactly.
There's a major rebuild in plan there. I know the old chairman has brought in Richie Myler, former Leeds player, of course, as director of football, and they're now scouring, I suspect, the country and probably the eastern states of Australia, looking for a coach probably for next season. I think they'll see through this season just escaping any relegation worries, because London would probably be bottom of the ladder, and then give a chance to rebuild. I do know there's a group of people in Yorkshire and East Yorkshire that have put together quite a significant sum of money to invest in the whole franchise. So
that's good.
Good to see. Yeah. Mm. Well, Peter, of course, Catalans, they defeated Hull KR 36-6. They led 26, or scored 26 points before Hull got on the board. Salford 12-4 over the Broncos. Broncos, as we know, yet to win. The Wolves Lee game was a great game. Lee led 10-6.
Yeah, 2-point ball game. Yeah.
It was sunny conditions. The conditions were dry. Yeah. Plenty of good football. Wigan, as you said, over the Tigers. Wigan unbeaten at home this season. St Helens thrashed Hull FC. Giants 30-24 over Leeds. And we've got the Dragons on top on 14 points, with St Helens, Wigan and Wolves all on 12 points. So very good to see there. The Challenge Cup, 18th and 19th of May. Hull KR will take on Wigan and the Giants will take on the Wolves. So plenty happening in the English Rugby League. Peter?
There is. It's a few weeks in advance of where we are here in Australia. So, there is, I'm not sure what round they're into. It's probably about 10 or 11, maybe 12 by now. So, it's always great competition. It seems to be this year split. You know, there's like the same four
from
the other struggling, and that worries me a bit of the depth of the game in El Dart. Because everybody was wondering over there how rugby league will survive, as it's, you know, a very poor cousin to other codes compared to rugby.
You could almost lock the top four in from now on in, couldn't you?
I think so. Of course, Peter and Tim, the women, they had their round one wins to Leeds, Wigan, York and the Wolves. And just finally, the Auckland Rugby League competition, it will start on the 4th of May, men's and women's, round one, and we'll look forward to catching up with the scores after round one. Well, Peter Rowe, you've done an excellent job. We'll look forward to chatting with you next Monday as well. Have a great week, and all the best with your selections, and let's hope we have a very successful Anzac Challenge at Dorian Gardens locally here on Saturday.
Thank you, Pete.
Thanks, Scott.
Cheers, Pete. Bye. Well, there we go. Wonderful to chat with Peter Rowe, as we know.
Yeah, he's on top of it.
He certainly is. Well, listeners, that brings us to the end of our rugby league segment here on Sports Mix. As we've got a quick turnaround in our studio. We've got our people coming in from Edith Cowan University and co-host Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding. Tim Park, thank you so much for being with us in the studio.
Thank you, Gon.
And look forward to your company again next Monday. And if not, talking sport on Saturday. But let's hope you do well with your selections as well.
I'll be doing my best.
Well, I'm truly. Listeners, now don't forget, coming up after this short break, we'll be conducting our special preview of the Olympic Games with Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding and the ECU crew in the studio, starting just after 7. And that will start with a live chat with Greg Kading, the chair of the WA Olympic Committee. Can't wait. All that and more, Sports Mix 89.7 FM.
I'll run down.
Deep in your eyes, I touch on you more and more every time. When you leave, I'm begging you not to go. Call your name 2-3 times in a row. Such a funny thing for me to try to explain. How I'm feeling and my pride is the one to blame. Cause I know I don't understand just how your love can do it, no one else can. Oh.
to my friend so quietly.
Who he think he is?
Look at what you did to me. Titty shoes don't even need to buy a new dress. If you ain't there, ain't nobody else to impress. The way that you know what I thought I knew. It's the beat that my heart gets when I'm with you. But I still don't say just how you look and do I know what else can.
You got me looking so crazy right now. Your love's got me looking so crazy right now.
When the flow is loco, Young B and the ROC. OG, big homie, the one and only. Stick bony, but the pockets are fat like Tony. Soprano, the rock handle like Ben X2. I shake bonies, man, you can't get next to. The genuine article, I do not sing though. I sling though, if anything, I bling yo. Star like Ringo, war like a green beret. Crazy, bring your whole set. Crazy in the range, crazy in the range. They can't figure them out, they like, hey, is he insane? Yes, sir, I'm cut from a different cloth. My texture is the best firm chinchilla. I've been dealing with chain smokers. How do you think I got the name over? I've been realer, the game's over. Fall back young, ever since I made the change over to platinum. The game's been a rap one.
Got me looking so crazy, my baby. Crazy, baby. Got me looking so crazy right now. Your love's got me looking so crazy right now. You're crazy.
station sponsor.
At John Hughes Cherry, Prindleville Drive, Wangara, you get a brand new, beautifully styled Cherry Emoto 5 with leather sports seats, alloy wheels, keyless entry, rear dynamic view camera, wireless Apple CarPlay, Android Auto and smartphone charging, a massive interactive LCD, and plenty of active and passive safety features. Plus, you get a 7-year unlimited kilometre new car warranty, roadside assist and cat price servicing, all from $31,490. Hurry, they're selling fast.
johnhughes.com.au.
DL6061.
Pentanet is building a world-first gigabit internet network, and they need you to make it a reality. Join Operation Nexus to do your gigabit and save Perth from ordinary internet. Register for free at pentanet.com.au/nexus.
Station sponsor.
You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The Community Broadcasting Foundation resources community-owned and operated media stations just like this one, that connect people and tell vital, local stories so that we all enjoy a more vibrant, inclusive Australian culture and healthy democracy. Find out more about our work at cbf.com.au.
Hey guys, I'm Jess.
And I'm Lisa from the Veronicas for RAD, recording artists, actors and athletes against drink driving. We see a lot of things at gigs, mostly people having a good time and having a few drinks. But what we'd hate to see is someone getting behind the wheel after they've been drinking. Being even a little bit over the limit makes it too easy to lose control and possibly lose your life or that of a friend. So if you plan to drink, plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver who won't drink or stay the night at a friend's place. Remember, music lives and you should too.
Well, listeners, we're coming into the second hour of Sports Mix here on 89.7 FM. And as we've indicated, it's a special preview of the 2024 Olympic Games, less than 100 days to go. And we're joined live in the studio by my co-host, Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding, lecturer in exercise and sports sciences at Edith Cowan University. Evening, Doc.
Howdy, Gordon.
And we've got Fiona Idale and Christina Kendall. How are you both this evening?
Very well, thank you.
You're certainly looking very, very cheeky there. And we'll have Mark Scanlon and Shane Vile online as we examine everything that's happening in the lead-up to the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris. As we said, less than 100 days to go. But to start our preview, it's a warm welcome to Greg Kading, the chair of the WA Olympic Committee. Good evening, Greg.
Good evening, Gordon, and hello, Caitlin, and others in attendance there. Sounds like you've got an expert panel at your beck and call.
Nothing but the best from Edith Cowan University, Greg, well and truly. So, Greg, thank you so much for joining us tonight with our special preview of the Olympic Games and our Sports Mix program. I thought it was very opportune, less than 100 days to go, to be able to have a little bit of a chat about how preparations are going and so on. But, Greg, before we do that, a little bit about yourself, how you got started in sport and what have been some of your key highlights?
Oh, yeah, I mean... I attended on the weekend, fortunate to attend the 50th anniversary of Canning River Canoe Club, which was formed way back in 1974, and I was a founding member. So how did I get involved in sport? I got involved in kayaking and helped form a club back in 1974 with the purpose of doing the Avon Descent, and that's how I got involved in canoe sport. And from that point, I actually then got involved, obviously, in where canoe sport could take athletes, which included world championships and the Olympics. And it's been a career for me, admittedly, in a volunteer capacity ever since.
Well, that's an absolutely outstanding career then, Greg. And, of course, I know full well your involvement with Canoeing Australia at different stages. Now, your role as the chair of the WA Olympic Committee, I'm sure that's an enormous job. So the tasks and functions, and how does all that fit together, Greg?
Oh, look, you know, we're privileged to run the oldest state-based Olympic Council in Australia, and wow, along with ourselves and Queensland, and also the Olympic advisory panels that operate in the other states, we support the objectives of the Australian Olympic Committee, really, and assist them in delivering their outcomes. And that's basically, you know, protecting the principles of Olympism and the Olympic movement in Australia, and raising awareness of encouraging participation in sport. We all know about elite athlete performances, but it's really the underlying benefits to community and health, longevity, fitness, skill, social interaction, everything else. And it really is a nucleus for people to focus on as they go through their journey into elite sport. And benefits the health of Australians right across the board. And in Western Australia, we obviously advocate for Western Australians and Western Australian sports in respect of the Olympic movement.
Absolutely wonderful task that you've got there, and the promotion and the traditions as well would be so important, Greg.
Absolutely. We've got a great heritage in the Olympic movement, not only in Australia, of course, being one of the only two nations to compete in every modern Olympics, along with Greece. And that's a very privileged role that we do. We competed in Moscow, of course, when a lot of nations didn't attend because of the unrest that existed then, and obviously in the reverse happened in Los Angeles 4 years later. But Australia has been fortunate to resist the political imposts over time, and as I say, has had 100% attendance at all the modern Olympics, and continues to provide very large numbers in terms of participation at the Olympics.
It certainly does. Now, of course, with just under 100 days to go, preparations to date. Now, I'm sure the questions about funding, the selections. How are things going with the preparations for that, Greg?
Look, it's been fantastic, actually. One of the things that the Australian Olympic Committee has done is obviously the legacy of Sydney 2000 enables them to invest in the future of Olympic sports in Australia. And they effectively got a foundation which contributes a legacy fund towards the participation of athletes at the Olympics every 4 years. And also in the intervening years, obviously, the operations of the Olympic movement, as well as scholarship opportunities for athletes that are on the Olympic pathway. I was fortunate enough last week to attend an event up at Parliament House. We established the West Australian Parliamentary Friends Group over the last 12 months, which has been fantastic. And the West Australian government was a contributor towards the national fundraising total of put in $375,000 not only for the Olympic Games but also the Paralympic Games and the attendance of athletes to those games.
Well, that certainly is a sign of putting your money where your mouth is as well, Greg, well and truly.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And of course, you'd well understand, being a local, that, you know, what's behind sport in Western Australia. We have a very modern West Australian Institute of Sport, well backed by the West Australian government in terms of financial support and delivering more than its quota in terms of not only athletes to the Olympic Games, but in terms of medals even arising for the Olympic Games. And Western Australia has always pulled above its weight, as the term goes.
It's Caitlin here. I just had a question. As a recent, you know, relocated human to WA, do you find a lot of the athletes are originally from Western Australia, born and bred, or do you find it's a sort of mix of everybody, you know, flocking to and from? Because I, you know, of course, would recognise the prowess of weights.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, Australia very much a multicultural organisation, and you'd be aware we do have a significant migrant program over the years as well. So, but there's a lot of homegrown athletes, particularly in sports such as mine, in canoe kayak, where the surf movement in Australia is probably one of the strongest in the world. And actually, we recruit a lot of our elite kayaking athletes, you know, from a background in surf, canoe, kayak, or whatever. Most of them obviously homegrown athletes from Australia, but we obviously do have people that are migrating to Australia with a sports background, coming from sports institutes and universities, and you know, they've been captured by our high performance programs, given the opportunity to excel, and with the support that's available through the WA Institute of Sport, not only in terms of its programs but also the quality of its coaches that they have for their programs. A number of those athletes have been able to excel over the years, and some have gone on and not only been elite athletes, they've gone on to actually be successful coaches in their own right as well.
Now, of course, Greg, looking at some of the WA athletes selected to date, and this list, of course, is not finalised, but in basketball, we've got Kanu Pinder from the Wildcats in the basketball. We've got Yusuf Kloithia, Caitlin Parker and Charlie Senior in the boxing. In canoe, we've got Yale Steyn-Peres, sailing Matt Wern, the Kookaburra squad, James Collins, Jake Harvey, Adam Zawiski and Tom Wickham. And in the Hockey Roos squad, Alicia Power, Carrie Somerville and Penny Squibb. And of course, in athletics, we've got Peter Bowl, but it would look like that there will be no Sam Kerr in the women's football team.
No, that is unfortunate. And certainly that's only the start of the list in terms of West Australian participation, and we would anticipate somewhere north of 40 athletes as part of the contribution to the Australian Olympic team, probably somewhere around about the mid-40s, I'd suggest. We normally have around about 10 to 12% of the athletes, and they're predicting a team of 460 to 480 athletes from Australia attending the Paris Games. And as I say, around about 45 of those, hopefully West Australians, who will be out there to do their best.
Well and truly. Now, of course, just looking in the crystal ball and maybe some predictions, we've got Jessica Fox, of course, in the canoe slalom. We've got Grace Brown in the cycling. We've got Logan Martin in the BMX freestyle. We've got Matt Wern, of course, with sailing. Kylie McEwen and Ariane Titmus and Cameron McAvoy. Plenty in the swimming. We've got high jumper with Nicola Oslagers, Kelsey Lee Barber in the javelin, Nina Kennedy in the pole vault, and Matthew Richardson again in the cycling. You've got a whole range of others in terms of the cycling, the track, the rowing, the rugby sevens. We've got tennis mixed and doubles as well, and plenty more in the swimming. So we could talk, you know, for probably 20 or 40 minutes on our potentials, but there are certainly some famous names there that we're considering with our possibility for medal potential in the Paris Olympics, Greg.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, certainly. Over the years, there's obviously been a lot of focus on how well Australia does at the Olympics, and I have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, governments in supporting elite program competition want to see, you know, the ultimate success. So it's obviously through the World Cups, the World Championships, and ultimately Olympic success that a lot of our funding used to be dependent, you know, for the high performance programs. From the athlete's perspective, it's a little bit different, I think. Whilst obviously all of them would love to come out with one of those medals around their neck, the reality is most athletes are focused on just getting their personal performance best and delivering it at the right time. And that's what the athlete program's all about. And when you see the likes of an Ariane Titmus and you know, and the other swimmers, for example, with the success they get, it's delivering the performance when it's required. And when they deliver their personal best, it doesn't matter where they come in the program, as long as they've delivered their personal best and they feel satisfied when they go home. But I'm sure just having a gold, silver, a bronze around your neck also enhances that experience.
Certainly does. And, of course, Molly O'Callaghan just did very well at the recent championships over there in the Gold Coast. And you've got Zach Stubley-Cook, of course, and, as we said, Kyle Chalmers and Smith and Keeney in the diving. And just finally, Greg, three new sports coming up in Paris: sport, climbing, breakdance and surfing.
Yes, look, it is fantastic to see new innovative sports have an opportunity to come into the Olympic program. It has been a tradition over the years for host countries to be able to nominate a couple of sporting disciplines to participate in the Olympic Games. And I note the other day that Australian Surf Lifesaving has nominated the surf program for 2032, and it would be great if you get the opportunity to showcase the surf lifesaving athletes at our 2032 Olympics. But no, the ones that are coming in are certainly exciting. The sports are diversifying in the Olympics, and the reality is sport thrives on the media promotion that occurs. And if people don't know the funding, the way it generally works is the IOC obviously gets financial rights from the television of the Olympic Games, and those funds ultimately flow down towards the international federations which participate in the Games. So there's a lot of lobbying to get sports onto the Olympic programs. Whether they stay on the program, there's a mix of reasons for that. You know, it needs to be a worldwide participated sport, well participated across the five continental regions, and also have, you know, frankly, some good feedback in terms of media watching. So Jess Fox, for example, she's the name on everyone's tongue in my sport, and she's also a fantastic ambassador and elite athlete, being the top. The reality is the top three in the world consistently is C1 and K1 over the last few years, and hopefully a double medal chance even at this year's Olympics.
Exactly. Well, Greg Kading, the chair of the WA Olympic Committee, thank you for joining us here on our Sports Mix program with our special preview of the Olympic Games. Keep up the very good work, and we're going to be talking to you later on in terms of not only the Avon Descent experience, but also how the results and outcomes from the Olympic Games as well. So, Greg, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
No worries, and thanks, and look forward to catching up again, Gordon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg. Bye. Cheers. Well, there we go, folks. Great to have Greg Kading, the chair of the WA Olympic Committee, join us. And Caitlin, he's highlighted Jessica Fox, of course, canoe slalom, C1 and K1, but plenty of other athletes there. And as Greg was saying, there's only about half a dozen WA athletes have been selected so far, but expecting more than 40 to finish up in our Olympic squads and teams.
And it's interesting because a lot of qualification does happen this close out to the Games, and I think that's, you know, something non-athletes or those who aren't familiar with the elite athlete pathway wouldn't be familiar with, is that athletes are really competing and vying for spots this late, I suppose, as we lead up to the Olympics. So it's interesting to even hear how many are still to be selected, just as we're, you know, I would think of planning my travel, but we can't do that yet.
No, we certainly can't. Well, Caitlin, I'm certainly looking forward to the rest of the program. So where to next will we go with our special preview then?
Our whole preview is really trying to sort of leverage our group's collective interests and expertise. We've got a resident Olympian. We've got a bunch of research in this space. We've got people who work in, you know, elite athlete performance and well-being. And it's really just this nice cohesive mix of you know, passion for watching and doing and learning about. So it hopefully will give everybody a bit of everything in this bit of a crammed hour.
Well, let's go to our first break and get ourselves organised, and then we'll come back. So Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding, we are lecturer in exercise in sports sciences at Edith Cowan University, co-hosted the program, Fiona Idale and Christina Kendall. Christina, you're very quiet sitting over there, looking very content.
It's because my chair is very squeaky and I'm trying not to move and make it. But no, trust me, Gordon, when we start talking about some of the doping scandals that always come around with the Olympics, I think I've got some interesting things to share about that, especially with the recent news that broke today about China.
Yes, it certainly has. And Fiona, it's great to have you back in the studio, and looking forward to your input this evening as well.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, we go to our break. Don't forget Sports Mix 89.7 FM.
Tune in every Monday evening to Sports Mix between 6 to 8pm with Gordon Allen and the team for all the latest rugby league news and what's happening in local junior sport. For your latest weekly sports fix, it's Sports Mix on 89.7 FM.
Station sponsor.
The need for vital resources continues to rise. Meanwhile, the climate is warming and regions are becoming drier. We need new ways to support our increasing population while also conserving our rich biodiversity. Any ideas?
Every single day, science graduates face situations that go beyond theory. That's why we teach our students to be creative thinkers, because creative thinking can be your superpower. ECU, creative thinkers made here. Search ECU and apply now.
Stay in the loop with what's happening in your community. Visit station sponsor City of Joondalup's website at joondalup.wa.gov.au and subscribe to an e-newsletter. You'll find everything you need to know about community, events, updates and job vacancies. Register today for this free service.
Have you ever wanted to look at the stars up close? Well, now you can. Station sponsor the Gravity Discovery Centre will open a whole new world of amazement for you. Located north of Perth, just off Indian Ocean Drive, the Gravity Discovery Centre has something for everyone, with a great range of attractions. Climb the Leaning Tower, explore the Cosmology Gallery, get up close in the Biodiversity Gallery, and take in the marvels of the Milky Way at the Observatory. For more information, bookings and tickets, go to gravitycentre.com.au.
It don't matter to me if you really feel that you need some time to be free. Time to go out searching for yourself, hoping to find time to go to find. It don't matter to me if you take up with someone who's better than me, 'cause you're happy. A lot of people have an ego hang up 'cause they wanna be the only one.
Everybody moving on and trying to find out what's been missing in the past. And it don't matter to me if your searching brings you back together with me. 'Cause there'll always be an empty room waiting for you, an open heart waiting for you. Time is on my side, 'cause it don't matter to me.
Listeners, welcome back to Sports Mix here on 89.7 FM, and we're midway through our special preview of the 2024 Olympic Games, less than 100 days to go, and we're joined live in the studio by my co-host Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding, lecturer in exercise and sports sciences at Edith Cowan University. We've got Fiona Iredale and Christina Kendall, and we're joined live online now as well by Mark Scanlon. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Gordon, and good evening to my esteemed colleagues.
Aww. There we go. Now, that's a great way. Caitlin, what a great introduction.
I'm esteemed. I love it. Yes, Gordon, this is a really nice preview for the 2024 Olympic Games. And I think it's nice to see, given that the last Olympics in 2021 were in Tokyo and obviously quite marred by the COVID-19 experience and public health measures that really limited spectators, athlete involvement, activities and ceremonial sort of, you know, Olympic traditions that athletes were having to select whether to attend or not. But it'd be interesting to hear from, you know, someone who's actually been a part of that. So I'd love to hear from Fiona. What is it to be an Olympian and to engage in the Olympic experience?
Well, for a lot of people, it's an opportunity of a lifetime. As Greg mentioned yesterday, everyone who goes to the Olympics is just trying to do the best they can, do their best in their own time. And for a lot of people, that is trying for medals. But for some people, it's not. It's just about getting there, being the best you can be on the day, and all your preparation for 4 years and even longer than that before is about going into that. And so for a lot of people, the chance to go to the Olympics comes around once in a lifetime. The whole Olympic experience involves the opening ceremony, the closing ceremony, your own competition, and obviously if you're lucky enough to compete early in the Games, because it goes for 3 weeks, lucky enough to compete early, then you get the opportunity to just really soak up the whole Olympic Village, to be part of your whole national team, go to watch other events, and then obviously be part of the closing ceremony, which is probably one of the biggest celebrations of achievement that I've ever been involved in. It's so much more than the event, and if you only ever compete in single sport events, you don't get that same multi-sport event like, or feeling like you get at the Commonwealth Games or the Olympics.
And I do feel like a bit of a nerd because I'm getting goosebumps thinking about the opening and closing ceremonies, and I've never attended, but I get such a visceral reaction. I don't know about you, Chrissy. How do you feel watching?
I become the biggest sports nut at the time of the Olympics. I don't care what sport it is, what country it is, I will watch anything and everything that is on. I think, as Fiona said, even as a spectator, the unity that you find when you're watching that, knowing that all your countrymen and women are all watching the same thing and have a common thing that you're cheering for, and you just want the best. And then, of course, you hear about all these stories that come out in the Olympics, and you hear about how certain athletes for maybe lesser known sports or ones that don't get as much financial support, how they made their way to the Olympics. And I think that's why we all struggled a bit in 2021, because there are athletes that even with just 1 year difference from the game supposed to be in 2020 to now being in 2021, financially they may not have been able to compete. It maybe that's their retirement age, and so they missed out on this amazing opportunity. And I would only wish one day to go to the Olympics and see it.
And although it's a 4-year cycle, nobody decides I'm going to the Olympics in 4 years. It's been tens, dozens of years that contributing towards that. So to be working towards that for your entire career, and then for you not to be able to do it for the reasons of COVID or whatever, it might be injury or whatever, is just devastating for people.
And speaking of devastating, Mark, is it interesting to you as a, you know, aspiring PhD candidate looking at, you know, analysis of football, to see the Ollie Roos not qualify and, you know, have such a invested, you know, duration before the games to then fall short?
That's a smooth segue there, Caitlin. I thought, look, there's a couple of reasons as to why the Ollie Roos haven't qualified, and, you know, I could take up a full radio segment. But the long and short of it was that we didn't take our best available squad and we weren't good enough. So it is going to be disappointing for a lot of Australia's next generation male players, because they won't get that international tournament experience and they don't get to go to the Olympics. But the positive side is that our Matildas are going again, and a real medal chance this time. So you kind of got to take the rough with the smooth.
Swings and roundabouts, as we might say.
Yeah.
No, that's really, I mean, and as I guess spectators alike, it's, I guess, sad to not have our home team to watch, but I think that it's helpful anyway just to respect the process and to see, you know, from whether it's a coach or an athlete's perspective, the different sort of emphasis that goes into trying to qualify or not, and training and being the best, like we described in the earlier segment, and, you know, finding what that means for each athlete. Now, within, I guess, the different qualification opportunities, we're now seeing, in particular in Paris, there's parity in Paris with men and women's sports. So I think that this is also paramount to understand that there's this milestone in 2024, albeit 2024, but recognizing that we now have equal opportunity for men and women at the games to be representing their sports. So really keen to hear both of your perspectives in the studio.
I think it's fantastic. My sport of judo, for a long time there were higher quotas for males than there were for females, and it's wonderful that it's equal now. And it's the process for qualifying, if I can just talk a little bit about that, it's different for all sports. But for example, at a lot of international events, a country can enter numerous people. However, at the Olympics, there's a strict quota for most events, particularly in some of the combat sports where they have to fight against each other. So there's only so many hours to get a competition done. And to have the same amount of men and women is fantastic. And for them all to go through the same qualifying process where they have to be on the world tour, they have to gain ranking points, they have to be in the top X number of athletes in the world. And then, interestingly, on top of that is that because of the Olympic spirit, and that the Olympics are about participation for everyone, there are lots of wildcard opportunities for countries who, for example, wouldn't otherwise qualify any athletes or any athletes in a certain group of sports. So there's always that the underdog and the opportunity for people, and we can't underestimate that for the person, but also for the country that they come from and the future of their sport in the country that they come from. It just brings huge benefits for everyone to keep that Olympic spirit, as opposed to just it's all about winning all the time.
And I suppose a sinister approach to that is, you know, with doping scandals, we can see that wild card positions become quite valuable because athletes might be disqualified from participating, and then their spot goes to the next available wild card because they might not have qualified outright, but if someone above them has, for whatever reason, scratched for myriad of issues that they may have encountered, you know, those wild card spots are quite handy, and it just shows that it's important for athletes to keep trying, regardless of whether you're the top three or four in the planet. You know, it's still important because you don't know what happens. Well, you can't control other people. So it's important to continue to do your best. And I think that's sort of the theme of tonight's segment is, you know, doing your best.
And along that, too, there are some sports and some teams that can bring alternates. And if something were to happen to a athlete at the games, an alternate. So for example, in women's gymnastics, they bring alternates, which is great. But I know that that's not always the case. So in judo, for example, even if you are the second best and you're looked at as an alternate, that doesn't mean that you're going to go and...
So in judo, there will only be one athlete per country, per division. So you could be second best in the world. But if your mate from down the road is first best, is that a thing? Best in the world, then you're not going to the Olympics. And I guess that brings on to the discussion about switching countries and how, for example, if you come from a very strong country like Japan or even France will win a lot of medals in judo at the Olympics. You might be better than 99.9% of all the athletes competing worldwide, but you can't go because you come from such a strong country.
And that's my background. So I have dual citizenship with the US and with Australia, and the United States in fencing is just the best. It's really hard to find a country that comes close to them in terms of record-breaking and quantum of medals. But I was able to relinquish that affiliation and join Australia's team, and it gave me so many opportunities, you know, to travel, to compete, and... definitely brought the best out in me. Now, Mark, do you see a lot of athletes either that you work with or that you're aware of who are multinational, who get to sort of, you know, ebb and flow or choose one affiliation over another?
Yes, because the representing your country in the eyes of FIFA, you're eligible up to your grandparents' passport. So it happens quite a bit, actually, with trying to naturalize Australian players where... we take advantage of an Australian parent, or adverse to that, we lose players to the passport of their parents or grandparents as well. So in the eyes of FIFA, you can represent any country to which you can prove your grandparents had a passport for.
Which is really interesting, because I would never have thought about how many passports my grandparents may have held.
There's a lot of... people with Scottish accents in the Australian team, or Welsh accents, and a lot of people with Australian accents in the Scottish team as well, in terms of football and FIFA. Yeah.
No, I think it's beautiful, because again, it's you know, sport really is uniting, and you know, some athletes with a chip on their shoulder might see that as a disadvantage for someone else, but it's really just about, you know, finding opportunities and making the most of it. Whereas you can see the, again, sort of sinister angle. I'm playing devil's advocate tonight with all the doping scandals. And I think that trying to get an enhanced sort of edge over your opponents by cheating in that way, it does sort of undermine the spirit of the Olympic Games. And I think that that's why there's been the development and potential, you know, I guess, promotion of the enhanced games, which is where it's encouraging doping and it sees it as leveling the playing field. So I'm keen to hear, Chrissy, what you think as our resident expert in this space.
Yes. First, just so you know, I don't condone the use of performance-enhancing drugs. However, this is quite, I think, comical, the sort of enhancing games. And it was, funnily enough, started by an Australian business person. Nothing to do, not in sport himself, but it, I think, comes from some of the ideology and thoughts that everybody is doping, whether you think they are not, and if we really want it to be a fair advantage, then just let everyone dope or use some sort of performance enhancing drug. Whether that came from sort of the idea that we have around cycling or you know, outdoor road cycling, and some of these other sports where we notoriously see many cases year after year of doping, and the Olympics is no different to that. I don't think we have to go back too far to remember Russia and that whole scandal. There's Netflix documentaries. There's things that you can watch on YouTube. And more recently, as of today, we found out about the doping scandal with China and the the scandal really comes from the reporting of potentially positive results. So just a very quickly to bring it back to what WADA or the World Anti-Doping Agency does is they are responsible for testing all Olympic athletes or controlling their tests to make sure that it is a clean game or series of tournaments or events. However, what happened in 2020, which we're finding out just today, just recently, is that a group of 23 swimmers from China, so almost half, if just not over half of the Chinese swimming team, all tested positive for a substance that has previously been tested positive in athletes, resulting in a full ban for 1 year, 2 years, 4 years, whatever it may be. Now, what typically happens is when athletes do test positive, WADA then makes an announcement so that it becomes public news. And this is where the scandal is. It's not about this positive test from the athletes, because one could argue that there wasn't enough of the substance in their blood, but the issue comes from the fact that it's been held from public knowledge and there's no precedent case for that. And WADA is saying that they did do follow-up tests, but none of them are being published. So it's more that we just need answers, because I can tell you right now, one of the most interesting, I think, events will be swimming, because in the 2022 the 2021, which were the 2020 Olympic Games, China brought home a series of gold medals. Their 4x200 broke a world record, putting the U.S. in second and Australia in third, so taking away gold medals potentially. They did set a world record, which a year later was then taken by Australia, so we can be happy about that. But given some of the previous issues with the Chinese swimming team, Mack Horton having stood down and not accepting medals, when the Chinese athlete, male swimmer, who did test positive and later banned, although only for 1 year for swimming. So I think there's just this sort of, unfortunate, I don't want to say it puts a bad light on things, but it makes you question a lot of these
athletes.
And it's
crazy, because Chrissy and I were talking about this earlier, how an athlete like Peter Bowl was vilified in the media for a test that was presumed positive and then later exonerated and selected for the Olympics. But one could speculate that that was an incredibly racist approach of publishing, you know, the information, whereas this was kept secret. And it's this double standard that I think that Chrissy is trying to bring to light, is that we're trying to keep the games clean and keep the games fair, but the way in which we approach athletes and teams, it should be an equal standard. It shouldn't be that, you know, track and field athlete Sha'Carri Richardson in the U.S., you know, same sort of issue, being completely vilified for even less what we would, I guess, assume, you know, in impeding substances. I guess that's a huge point of discussion, and we could probably go on for days. But do we see, I guess, Mark, with your coach lens, do you see a lot of athletes being concerned about contaminated substances? Because a lot of young people will use protein powders and creatine and some kind of nutritional supplements to keep themselves active and recovered. But do you see them being concerned about the implications of potential, you know, contamination?
Yes, that's certainly something I know, certainly in football circles, that is discussed with players. The key, of course, is to make sure that you have a good support staff and medical team around those players, and to make sure if you are going to take a supplement, for instance, you might be supplementing creatine, to make sure that it's from a distributor or a producer that it has batch testing, just to try to kind of ensure the quality of the product that you're getting, therefore the supplement isn't being made in the same vat or after a different substance has been produced. But look, there are many things wrong with football. I don't know if doping is maybe top of the tree at the moment. It's probably VAR, but it's certainly something that they'll be concerned about.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Fee and Chrissy. I think that this is, again, just a bit of a can of worms we could go on for days. And I do hope that any listeners, if you have any questions and you're interested in learning more, we're very happy to field any of those questions. But Gordon, I'm happy for you to take us away.
Well, thank you very much, Caitlin, and to the crew here, and to you, Mark Scanlon. Thanks so much for joining us live during Sports Mix on 89.7 FM, and good luck with the rest of the season for your football, Mark. Well and truly.
Thank you very much.
No problems. Listeners, we'll go to our final break here on the program on Sports Mix. As we said, we're in a special program tonight previewing the 2024 Olympic Games. And, Chrissy, it's certainly the Chinese, release of the drug story isn't good at all.
It's not good, but what I think it will do is create a bit of hype for swimming, at least, because it's always been China, Australia, US, and I just hope it doesn't create a negative experience. I would hate for athletes to not want to swim, which happened with Russia when their scandal came out. Athletes didn't want to compete against them because they were cheaters. So yeah, be interesting.
Well, Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding, we'll go to our next break and you'll get everything organised for our final segment here on Sports Mix 89.7 FM.
Give your business a unique position right here. For more information on how 89.7 FM can grow your business, go to 89.7fm.com.au.
The 89.7 FM Community File.
ECU is proud to offer a free exercise clinic where you can participate either virtually via an online platform or in person at the ECU Health Centre in Wanneroo. The free exercise clinic is open to anyone 18 years and older, and each session goes for 60 minutes. Sessions are run by ECU's third and fourth year exercise science students, supervised by accredited exercise physiologists. You can enrol in the full 13-week program or simply attend as many or as few sessions as you like. Visit the ECU Health Centre website for more information.
The Community File.
Do you have 1 free hour per week and a passion for helping young people? EdConnect Australia's volunteers provide friendship and guidance to students who need a little support to reach their full potential. You can help as a mentor working one-to-one with a student or as a learning support volunteer to assist in classrooms, breakfast clubs or a variety of other roles. For further information, please call 9444 8646 or go to www.edconnect.org.au.
Promote your non-profit organisation or community group and it's free. Head to our website at 897fm.com.au.
Well, welcome back to our Sports Mix here on 89.7 FM. Just a short break there, listeners, because we've got plenty to cover. And we're joined live online now by Shane Vile from Edith Cowan University. Good evening, Shane.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm pretty good. We've got Dr. Caitlin Fox-Harding, as you know, and Chrissy and Fiona in the studio as part of the panel. And Caitlin, take us away.
Hi, Shane. We got a better welcome from Mark. I'm just going to put that out there. We were called esteemed colleagues, so...
Look, I was just going to say you just got a couple of legends, or actually three legends in there.
I was going to say, just a couple? Who are we missing out?
We're off to the races. So, Shane, we would love to pick your brain all about sort of athlete development, athlete identification and talent ID that we've got. And we just are really keen, I guess as a holistic approach with your sports science background and your biomechanics prowess, could you give us sort of an overview when you're looking at elite athletes and the lead up to an Olympic Games? What do people in your space, how do you contribute and sort of what are you looking for and how do you feed that back to either the athlete or to the coaching team?
So firstly, we always kind of work like super close with the national sporting organizations. So, you know, at the end of the day, you tend to have these institutes with people that have expertise. So I was obviously, my kind of area is biomechanics, but then, you know, you need to be able to apply that in a sport-specific domain. So working very closely with these national sporting organizations where these coaches have taken athletes right through the development pathway all the way to elite status and hopefully on to winning medals. You know, they're really the ones that have the expertise in what it takes to do well in their sport. So I guess from the sports science perspective, the contribution is really just to apply a scientific rationale and rigor to the testing and I guess the numbers that we pull out and report back to the national sporting organizations.
So would you assume that certain either skills or body types or limb lengths, for example, would make certain athletes more palatable for different sports?
I'd say there's probably more niche sports where that does have a bit of a bigger effect. But there's also other sports where, you know, we look at, for example, sprinting, which is where I worked a lot in. You have your kind of typical looking sprinter, but then, you know, we've had a few kind of really world-class sprinters come out of China recently that, you know, their acceleration up to 60 meters is unheard of. They're just the best. And their stature and anthropometry is really different to that of, you know, someone like Usain Bolt, for instance. So I guess what I'm kind of moving towards is that the stereotypical idea that we have of best athletes in specific sporting domains is kind of wearing away a little bit, because we're getting some individuals that don't really fit the mold but are still really achieving highly. So I guess it helps us to stop looking at it as a cookie cutter model and instead look at the individual and kind of what talent they already have and the areas that you can develop and the areas that they may have already reached their ceiling, so to speak.
That's great. And there was a little bit of discussion earlier about the sort of, not poaching as such, but the sort of transfer of skills from one code to another, and how you know, talent identification in that space might not be suited, you know, for qualification for surf life saving, for example. I'll use that as a potential new sport, but could be really great for canoeing. Do you see that within talent ID spaces, where you might have people sort of encouraged to go one pathway over another?
Yeah, I actually think this is probably an underutilized area. So, you know, you might have someone that's, you know, top 20 sprinter in Australia. And unfortunately, on the world stage, that's probably not going to amount to winning a medal. But if you could take that athlete and kind of already take their elite training status, so they're already training at a really high level, they already got the mentality there. So you're simply having to teach them a skill that is somewhat aligned to a skill that they've already really honed down quite well. So, you know, if you could take someone that is a sprinter and then put them into a sport like a winter sport like skeleton, then, you know, we see that transfer skill fit really easily. So obviously for some sports where the skill is so niche, like badminton, it's really difficult to kind of take a sport, you know, someone from sprinting or something like that and then put them into that sport. But there are transferable skills like sprinting, jumping, change of direction, all these kinds of things. So I do think it's pretty underutilized, because you need to have a few kind of areas collide, which is you need the athlete to firstly want to be able to switch sports. They need to have a coach that is willing to develop their new skills. And then they obviously have to then attain a certain level within that sport, which all of those things are not guaranteed. But I think it's like once you put your kind of money or your resources into it, you're already taking an athlete that's at a pretty high level. So I think it's money well spent.
Well, it's interesting because there are a couple examples of these athletes that do have cross sort of Olympic debuts with Summer and Winter Olympic Games. I think Lolo Jones did track and field and then also was a bobsledder, I believe. And then I'm trying to pronounce his name, but Pita Taufatufua, the very famous oiled man who was from Fiji, competed in Taekwondo, I think, or some martial art, and then also was in the Winter Olympics in some other form of, I don't even know what he did, but again, those are just two athletes, but it's not very common. Fee, have you seen or engaged with any athletes that either you coached or worked with who were cross-sport?
I haven't seen a lot. I was involved at the AIS with a program that combat sports were putting in place, and it was about talent transfer, and there was a national search for athletes who wanted to switch into the combat codes, and we went through a process of selection. So it was like a 5-day selection camp, and it was like an SAS camp and run by people who had probably been in the SAS, and that was coming from the fact that you not only needed to be physically strong, but you needed to have the mentality to succeed in combat sports. And if you had the physicality but didn't have the mentality, you were on your way home. But otherwise, the things they put them through were really, really tough. Some of them got through, but then none of them actually then made it in the sports after that. So it is a, it's very difficult to transfer into a sport which has multiple physical attributes and multiple skills. It's much easier, but not easy, to move into something like some of your sports, like your skeleton, or wherever you have to run and push really, really, really hard, and that's what you're really, really, really good at already, and then just learn the next skills. Not simple at all, but easier than going to a sport where there's multiple different areas of skill and physicality involved.
And Chrissy, how would someone recover and condition and be ready if they have 2 years to prepare between games, because the cycle then gets broken? What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's it's one thing that we deal with in strength and conditioning, even when we look at collegiate sports, when we look at sports that have world championships that are on off years to the Olympics. However, as Fiona was mentioning, when we talk about athletes that will compete in different sports at different times of the year, winter and summer, for example, is it's usually athletes who compete in what we would call a closed sport, where it is a one, more or less one type of dominant activity or movement that they do. So another example is we will often see rowers go into track cycling because of that pushing movement, where when you have open sports or actions or movements, that's when you have someone who, if they have to focus on change of direction, jump height, ball hand-eye coordination, and then they go to a sport which is completely different, darts or hurling or something, that becomes unrealistic because you just simply don't have the time to recover or the time to train for that specific type of skill set. So it is doable, and it's all about tapering and recovering, because theoretically speaking, an athlete can stay at their peak performance for 2 weeks. Funnily enough, that's usually about how long they're going to be competing at the Olympics. If they're in a sport where they have prelims, semifinals, and finals, after about 2 weeks, don't expect to see performance getting any better. So it's about knowing how quickly the body can peak, and that's an individual response, and then how long it takes to recover before it can peak again.
That's great, because I think also for our young listeners to think about the importance of the lead up to these more bigger milestones. You know, it really is this planning process, so it puts into perspective why there's preseason training camps and why there are periods of off training where you're not doing things, because it's really about peaking at the right time. I do just want to make a correction. I completely misnationalized Mr. Pita. He's Tongan and competed in taekwondo, cross-country skiing, as well as canoe. So wanted to set the record straight.
I think that also alludes to qualification as well, because coming from a smaller country and being a very capable athlete maybe makes it easier for you to transfer into another sport and compete in that one too, which is fantastic for that country. They get to have a good representative in multiple different sports and promote all those different sports. But I think that might be harder in a country where the qualification is a bit harder.
And he just, I follow him. I'm one of those followers of the oily man on Instagram. He didn't qualify for this current Olympics. And I just had a check when I was correcting his nationality. He just turned 40. Now, wow. Shane, with your understanding of, you know, talent ID, is there a factor of age? Like, are you looking at maturation? Are you looking at, you know, are there sports where there's a peak for athletic performance where you sort of stop looking at an athlete when they sort of reach a certain age group?
Yeah, unfortunately, and it certainly is. So, you know, if you look at something like sprinting, for example, it's a sport where a lot of high-level coaches, once you hit a certain age, and if you haven't, you know, hit certain milestones in times, for example, in sprinting, like if you're going to do a 100-meter sprint, if you're a female, if you haven't kind of hit somewhere, you know, in the 12s, low 12s, then by a certain age, then they're probably not going to look at taking you on unless they really see something in you. And then kind of same for males, if you're not kind of like the high 10s or low 11s at a certain age, then they tend to stop looking at you, because at the end of the day, what happens is, you know, in sports like sprinting in Australia, is that we might do a big search, but these athletes are already represented by a coach, And if we have identified them as a high-level athlete, it's really up to the coach and athlete pair to be able to engage into that sports science servicing. So if that being the case, that they have been identified, they just get access to that servicing, and it's really down to whether that coach goes, yes, I want that, or no, I don't want that. So there's only kind of so much that the sports can be ID'd, in the sense that, you know, from an institution perspective, where we go, yes, this athlete is going to go somewhere, it's really down to the coach and athlete pair. So I would always kind of give that advice to younger athletes is, you know, make sure you spend time and do your homework on your coach that you're working with, because at the end of the day, they play a large part in obviously your programming, what competitions you're going to attend, and also developing you as an athlete. So
those are
I kind of put more emphasis on the coach-athlete pair.
That's great. And you're also using some really interesting vocabulary. So we've been talking about identification, we've been talking about talent, some other words that I don't know if we've necessarily defined, but Fiona, do you want to help me talk through categorization and pathways? Because there's elite athlete pathways, and what is categorization? And I know that it has to do with funding, but what is it in a nutshell that we're talking about?
So the Australian Sports Commission and the AIS did a big piece probably pushing 10 years ago now about really making clear athlete pathways. So if a young athlete says they want to go to the Olympics, they can see a pathway in their sport, and it'll be part of being in a club, then in a state junior squad, then a state senior squad, moving into national, junior, senior. And then when you get to the next level, when it comes to funding, the Australian Sports Commission is funding based on medal potentials. So you have podium ready, podium potential, emerging, and different classifications. And then the sports will classify those athletes at the national level based on their results and their perceived potential, and then the funding that they get to help support them go to the competitions and the training that they need is based on those classifications. So, and like I said, the AIS and the Australian Sports Commission did a big piece, and most nationally funded sports will have quite clear pathways that young athletes can see. I want to get there. How do I need to do it? What's my pathway? Where am I going?
That's great. And part of that, I suppose, is picking a coach, like Shane was explaining, and recognizing, you know, what the, I guess, expectations are, and what Chrissy was describing, recognizing the implications of a training and competition load, and trying to emphasize on an individual basis what is going to maximize my potential for selection or for opportunities to demonstrate that podium potential, as we described. Chrissy, is that the same for all countries, or has Australia got a model that we should be looking at adopting elsewhere?
I would say it's pretty similar for your big nations, those that have the funding, those that have the attention. So you're going to find something similar for the US, you're going to find something similar in the UK. You also see very similar talent identification programs, and that's really where it comes down to. And again, it's a thing, it's money. It comes down to money and policies. Yeah, and that's why, you know, people say, oh, you know, these certain countries always dominate. Is it genetic? Is that what? No, it's countries of millions, if not billions, of people that are all funding this and have a very large talent pool to choose from.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you to all of my esteemed colleagues, as Mark quoted.
And legends, as Shane said.
But we'll hand over to you, Gordon.
Well, thank you, Shane, for joining us live here in the preview of the Olympic Games for 2024, and we'll no doubt chat to you again in the future.
Thank you. Appreciate it, legends.
Now, there you go. That's a wonderful way to finish that interview, well and truly. Well, a big thank you to Caitlin Fox-Harding for putting together the panel this evening. To you, Fiona, thank you for joining us in the studio. And Chrissy Kendall, thank you so much. And to Shane and to Mark Scanlon, been absolutely fantastic. And I suppose, just as an aside, it was great to see the performance by Torrey Lewis, the young 19-year-old sprinter, in the first time in the World Diamond League Games, in the Diamond League Games Championships over the weekend. And let's hope that she can continue as well. Fantastic result there. But look, we know we're going to organise another discussion later in the year, I think, when we're going to examine and review the Olympic Games.
We'll definitely have an opportunity to reflect and to sort of bring about some of the stories that pulled on our heartstrings or really shook the nation, because I think, like Chrissy said, there's a lot brewing.
Well and truly. Well, listeners, don't forget Anzac Day Thursday. Make sure you're rugged up for the dawn services on Thursday morning. In the meantime, have a great week. Look forward to your company again next Monday, Sports Mix, here on 89.7 FM.
Station sponsor City of Joondalup Leisure Centre, Craigie, is conveniently open 7 days a week, excluding some public holidays, ensuring they cater for the busiest lifestyle. Sign up for a multi-access membership to receive access to gym, group fitness classes and the outdoor pool. Visit joondalup-leisure.com.au for more details.
Here's David Williams from Perth Glory for RAD.
Football is a true team sport. When you're a part of a team, you support each other, you back each other up and you do whatever it takes to help a teammate who's in trouble. So if you're with someone who's been drinking, don't let them get behind the wheel. Take their keys and call a taxi, because mates don't let their mates drink drive.
RAD. RAD.org.au.
Sponsorship of community radio is effective and it's incredibly cheap. For more information, go to 897fm.com.au.
Pentanet is building a world-first gigabit internet network, and they need your help to make it a reality. Join Operation Nexus to do your gigabit and save your community from ordinary internet. Register for free at pentanet.com.au/nexus.
Station sponsor.
The following program may contain coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Redheads is where guitarists come to play. We've got all your favourite guitarists from the Golden West.
My dad's got a couple of stories that are a little bit similar to some of the things that happened in Tolkien Towers.
Favourite rock heroes from interstate.
And my father was devastated when I said, I'm not playing this thing anymore.
And we've got international superstars.
We just want to bring people together.
Tune in to Shredheads, 8 p.m. Monday nights on 89.7 FM.
This is Shredheads with Chris on 89.7.